Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Now, should pharmacists be able to write some prescriptions instead of us having to go to the GP? Well, that possibility moved a step closer today when the Minister for Health announced a new expert task force. Initially, the group will consider letting pharmacists extend existing prescriptions, but will then move on to looking at allowing pharmacists diagnose common minor ailments and write new prescriptions. The government says these moves will make it easier and faster for patients to get the medication they need, but some GPs are not convinced. Well, Kate O'Connell is a Dublin pharmacist and a former TD, and Dr. Ray Wally is a GP and Associate Clinical Professor at the UCD Department of Medicine, and they both join us now on the line. You're both very welcome to Drive Time this evening. Kate, I might come to yourself first, and why do you think this makes sense?
Good evening, Sarah, and good evening, Dr. Wally. I'm delighted that finally work has initiated on something that pharmacists have been looking for many years. And I suppose internationally, the role of all healthcare professions has expanded as the fast-paced world of healthcare changes. Ireland is kind of late to the table on this. There have been expansion of roles in other jurisdictions to date. And some of it has worked and some of it hasn't worked. But the fact that we're late to the table means that at least we can learn from mistakes that happened in other jurisdictions. But also with population pressures and pressures within the system itself, it's very important that we look at maximising what we can do with the skills already within the system. So this is not about one person doing another person's job. This is about maximising what's available, what resources are available there to best serve the patients in the community. And what we did see during COVID was that pharmacists' doors remained open largely. We were very accessible and we worked very, very well with GPs and with hospitals in terms of the cyber attack and any other issues that kind of hit the health service. So pharmacists are very visible members of the community, very accessible. Some shops are very late opening hours. So there are huge positives to this task force, I think, and I'm looking forward to them reporting in a timely manner and then how, you know, we implement this in the community to best serve our patients.
So can you give us some examples then of conditions that you might imagine a pharmacist could easily prescribe and dispense for?
Well, obviously, we'll have to wait for the experts to report on what is suitable. But where I'm thinking, and when I look towards international experience, and I look at myself almost 2 decades qualified working in the community, it's what you're comfortable in with, what your skill set is, but also what training can be provided as part of a lifelong learning process. So we don't know all we need to know to provide these services, but it's about how we get there. So for me, I'd be looking at obviously, prescription extension. During COVID, prescriptions, there was temporary legislation put in place to extend prescriptions by 3 months. The sky didn't fall down. In the case of minor infections, like impetigo, skin infections in children, minor eye infections, and then moving on to things like blood pressure monitoring, cholesterol monitoring. And then for some pharmacists with particular skill sets that may have come from a clinical background, there sometimes can be scope for rationalisation of prescriptions. That is, removing some items, obviously in conjunction with the GP, to reduce the amount of medicines being taken with the same outcome. So there's lots of work to be done there, but pharmacists are ready to deliver. And we have proven to be, I suppose, agile and able in the past.
Okay.
When it came to vaccinations, when flu vaccine started, there was a pushback, for want of a better word, from the GP profession that we wouldn't be able to do it. We have proven that we can do that successfully. We have proven we can deliver emergency hormonal contraception in the community. So when we're asked, we do deliver. This is about providing a proper framework in which to evolve the profession.
All right. Ray Wally is also on the line, as I mentioned. And Dr. Ray Wally, we know GPs are, well, first of all, they're expensive, but you're also out the door. I think anybody around the country will attest to that. And this is surely a very handy and easy and hopefully safe way of spreading the workload.
Good evening. I think first thing we got to be certainly patient, basically safety has to be at the foremost concern with all of this. I'm noticing with the announcement by the minister, it will initially consider options to enable pharmacists to extend prescriptions. 90% of all chronic care occurs in general practice in the community. And we won a first-in-class award at the United Nations September 2021 on the basis of a chronic care program that's done in general practice. Now, the people who come back for further prescriptions on the basis of when they're needing an ECG, 24-hour BP, blood test, it's a very strong program. anything that will cause fragmentation of continuity of care will disrupt that, and we would have concerns with that. Because the 40-year evidence-based history of general practice is based on continuity care, which has been high in Ireland over the last number of years. Yes, unfortunately, our population has gone up 25%, if not more, in the last 11 years, and we certainly need more general practitioners. But it's only last August that pharmacy were in front of the Oireachtas Committee for Health explaining they have a shortage of manpower. And a lot of this has happened in UK, and they've done it over the last 30 years. And the problem is you have now the fragmentation of general practice, which we are concerned about. And over there, many pharmacies are now closing because they can't cope with the workload that they're taking on as extra work. So so we need to think sensibly about this. Certainly there needs to be a review. I think, you know, the die is cast on that task force. There are 5 pharmacists out of 8 people on the task force. So I think the die is cast. It appears that this decision has been made. But certainly from a patient safety point of view, we need to make sure even at this late stage we're going to get it right.
Okay, so fragmentation of continuity of care, Kate, would you see that concern?
Well, I suppose it depends on your experience with community pharmacy. I mean, my own experience is that I work hand in hand and my team work hand in hand with the local GPs. In times of when the cyber attack happened, pharmacies often were the only place that there were records available to hospitals for a short period of time. So I would see that we actually provide, I suppose, an established community pharmacy, an established customer base and relationships with GPs, that we are critical to the continuity of care and lack of fragmentation. And we also, you know, work with each other to provide care when there's nothing available, like Friday nights, Saturday nights, early Sunday mornings. For me, this is about the framework being correctly. And with reference to the 5 pharmacists on the task force, my understanding is, from looking at their histories, they all come from expertise backgrounds in terms of legislation, regulation, and in terms of department expertise. So I think it's critical that the task force that's in place knows what can be done, what's possible, and how to get there. And they are the first steps. But this is about, and as Dr. Wally rightly said, this is the patient is key here. And patients' expectations are changing over time. And you have to look at what patients want, what, you know, unique understanding of what patients' preferences are, their concerns are. And they may feel more comfortable going to the community pharmacy with such issues. And pharmacists as a profession, I think the last survey, we are the most trusted profession. Such a slight change from my last profession, but in terms of accessibility in the primary care setting, this is all about providing for patients in the community the best possible care with the resources we already have.
We might go back to what patients are saying, Dr. Ray Wally, because lots of people texting in relation to this, and really from the texts that we've got so far anyway, you know, quite a lot of positive engagement about this idea. Pharmacists should absolutely be able to prescribe, says this person, a total no-brainer, well overdue. Another person says, I've had to wait a week to 10 days to see my GP, who's so overworked. I would have no problem using a pharmacist for minor ailments. It makes absolute sense. Can you see that from a patient's perspective, Ray, when people just can't get into their GP, you know, for a week maybe, and they have maybe, I don't know, very bad hay fever that they need prescription antihistamines for example. I don't know if that's something that would be included in this, but just as an example of a minor ailment, the pharmacist could really make everybody's life much easier.
Well, like what I would say is where I am disappointed with this also is that there is no, we certainly need a comprehensive expansion of all care options, but basically we have no education in regard to minor ailments. Minor ailments are things which are self-limiting. Many don't need a prescription. Many can be provided over the counter. And we need to be expanding on educating the population in regard to what you do with hay fever. Virtually all of the medications, be it a sort of antihistamine, be it a eye drops for hay fever, be it a nasal spray, are available over the counter. And we have no national advice system in regard to that. So the first thing we should be doing is educating people in regard to things. So, for example, when to use paracetamol, when to use ibuprofen.
Sure. But you can do all that, you know, as well. And I agree with you. I think that would be very useful.
We haven't as a problem, Sarah.
But you could do all that as well as this.
Step one.
But do you have to start at step one, or could you do step one and step two at the same time?
Well, what isn't, so there's no study out there recently showing the amount of consultations we provide that we do not provide a prescription. So there are concerns with inappropriate potentially provision of antibiotics, whereby we have the past medical history, we have the idiosyncratic record to that patient, we know the medication's wrong, we know basically we've examined them face to face. You know, we've done 9 years in training in this, it's an algorithm supported by 120-hour course, which is what is happening in the UK plan, and basically, I'm afraid we are medicalizing all minor ailments, whereby the majority of these things can be treated with over-the-counter stuff or with general just advice, and we haven't started with doing this now. And my concern will be that a lot of this will back up with general practice. The next thing will be, that's not resolving, you've got to go and see your GP, when we knew it wouldn't resolve in the first place, whereas good advice, after a consultation, knowing their particular record, because next question is that person going to be able to go around specifically to different chemists? Because we tend to work on the basis of looking after a practice list of patients. So there is concerns over...
Okay, and I do. I hear all those concerns. I'm going to put those to Kate now in just 1 second. But I wonder, are you just protecting your patch here to an extent? Is this GP's
Not really.
This is our job and you can't take it off.
We are all out the door with work. But at the end of the day, what we don't want to do is medicalize all issues. What we don't want to do is get diagnostics wrong. So, for example, there's a pilot of this in Australia where all the medical associations said they would support initially, who have now withdrawn support, and that was in regard to patients suffering from urinary tract infections. And that includes a lot of different Royal Colleges in Australia. So, and the other thing is, the studies need to be looking at the medium and long-term effect on continuity of care, which is what didn't happen in the UK, which fragmented care in the UK, and the UK general practice is in disarray.
Okay, although I did come across a study in the British Medical Journal, and it was 2018 that it was reporting, so it's not that recent, but they looked at 65 different studies from around the world, mostly from the UK, but also Australia, Canada and the US, where pharmacists had done prescribing, and most reported positive experiences and views.
And they tend to be short-lived, not medium to long-term effects on continuity of care and general practice.
All right. Kate, I'll come to yourself just briefly on this. How much would you charge, speaking of protecting your patch?
That really depends on what way this works in terms of what way the role expands. So, there is already frameworks there in terms of paying pharmacists to do a consultation for the morning after pill. So there is a list of questions to be asked to prevent the sky falling down, as it were. But in terms of educating people in the community, community pharmacists spend all our days advising people with medications that are over the counter in order to control symptoms and avoiding them having to visit the doctor. Every day we do that. Mm. But sometimes we reach barriers, such as a minor eye infection in a child of 2 at the weekend, and there's no GP available. What this is about is letting us treat that child and get them better by Monday morning.
Sure, and that's great for the patient.
There is something more sinister.
It's good for
the
pharmacist as well, though.
It's good for the pharmacist. Of course it is. Of course it's good for all professions to be doing our job. But this is about, for me, this is about expanding on the expertise we all already have, learning from the mistakes of the past in other jurisdictions. But in terms of responsible...
My question is, would you be expecting to charge as much as a GP? Because some might say that would be fair enough. If the person had to go to a GP, then they would pay, whatever, €65. So would you expect to charge the same?
Well, what I do know historically from the evidence is that when pharmacists started vaccinating, the price of vaccinating to the state went down. So the more people you have doing things, generally the price will come down. So all I can quote is the history of what's happened in the past and hope that that is reflected in the future. And we have our doors open, we have staff on the floor. And yes, we are under pressure, but all professions need to evolve. And medicine is changing, healthcare is changing, and how people access healthcare, okay, be it online, be it in the community pharmacy, or be it in the GP, has completely changed.
All right.
In the last,
we'll keep
decades.
An eye on this one. It certainly seems interesting. Lots of text in it as well. We'll get to those a little later in the programme. Thank you both very much for joining us. That's Kate O'Connell and Dr. Ray Wally.